cliffcentral.com.
Yes, 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 and welcome to it. You are listening to the Weekly Mashup, and I am your girl, Miss Candace Mama. And no, guys, Tamisha will be here today, so fear not. He had a bit of a late sleep situation going on where the alarm didn't go off, and yeah. But anyway, he's going to be here like in 2 minutes, but we're going to have such a jam-packed show today. I'm so excited. We've got incredible guests in studio. We're going to be speaking about a movie she produced and her years of acting, and it's going to be so exciting. But before we do that, before we do that, last week, if you tuned in, we spoke about the Rhodes protests. And yes, me and Simpiwe had some interesting opinions. I got a lot of tweets and Facebook messages from people. And I even got checked because I said something that was incorrect last week. The show's got some amazing people who listen to it. So some of our US listeners, they texted me and they were like, listen, so you said black kids get killed all the time. And we just wanted to correct you and say that, firstly, it was not the way you called it. It was Trayvon Martin who had the Skittles in his pocket when he got shot. So I just wanted to say, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry to all the people who listen to us from the States and who got all my facts mixed up. So I'm really sorry, but I'd like to give you guys a huge shout out for always tuning in and listening to the show. It makes us so, so happy. But Mr. Tumisho Masha just walked into studio, so my apologies are all done and my shout outs are all out of the way. Hey, T.
Hey, how you doing, Candy? Why are you apologizing on my behalf?
No, I was apologizing for me.
What are you apologizing
for? Like last week, we spoke about the Rhodes protests and some of our US listeners wanted to correct me on my facts.
Because
it was only Trayvon Martin who had Skittles in his pocket, chick. And I was like, okay, guys, thanks for listening. I'm so glad.
But since then, things have gone like buck wild. I mean, Vits literally closed down.
I know.
What do you think about all that? You are actually studying yourself.
I am.
And we've spoken about this topic once or twice and spoken about how, you know, the kids, they have a valid point.
They do.
It's about time that people could go to university.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it was affordable because nothing free has any value.
Ah, true.
And what happens next when you can go to varsity, whether you can afford it or not, but there's not enough space now?
Shame to you. You're like just struggling to breathe.
Don't even say that. Don't even say anything. Don't even talk to me.
No, but you know what? The truth is, things are just escalating at such a quick rate right now. I mean, I look at what happened with one of the police officers. Last week, it was the kids getting shot. This week, it's the kids attacking the officers. And they hit one of the officers with a brick over his head. I mean, that was pretty vicious. That was pretty terrible.
I mean, I saw that. So, actually, I think I saw that on TV. I don't know if it was that particular protest where there was a policeman trying to grab a student and a whole bunch of them went after him.
Yes. And the biggest problem I had with that was some of the students have a very valid point. They're like, school needs to reopen because I can't afford to come back next year to redo this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'd also be mad if I've been studying medicine. It's my final year.
Yeah.
And now they're like, don't come back.
You got a whole year next year. Not even a semester. A whole year.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Hell no.
Look, it's one of those situations where whatever happens, it's going to be very telling for our future. If the fees do fall and we no longer have to pay for university, it has a consequence.
Mm.
Good or bad, it has a very real consequence.
Yeah.
If fees don't fall and people still have to pay for their university studies, there's also a consequence. But I think the biggest thing at the moment is, how does the government manage to balance all of these free things that they promise people? There's free housing on the way, that they got to take care of, free health, there's free water and sanitation and free university, and then they have to think about free schooling.
Yeah, but it's a problem that the government has over promising.
Yeah.
Like they always, every campaign, there's always a promise that they can't deliver. And now it's catching up with them because these students are like, but Blade, in 2013, you told us that you're supposed to be rolling out free education.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we are like quarter two, 2017, and you're still talking the same, you know, it's
well, the
same
president is saying now, we'll just do another commission.
Oh my.
Like when I don't know what to do, let's just
do a commission.
Do a commission. Let's spend some of those millions that we could have spent on you discussing it.
It's
you
like
know.
Kind of a corporate situation. It's a corporate problem-solving strategy.
That's right.
Because in corporate, all you do is you just hold meetings until people forget.
Exactly.
And the meeting just keeps transforming no one knows what the F you're talking about.
Yeah, until nothing really happens.
Yeah. And you all leave the meeting like, wow, that was a great strategy session.
Yeah.
I don't know what hell we were talking about.
That's probably why I'd never make it in corporate.
Nah.
But what happened in your week?
Wow. Was it a good week? It always feels like a good week for me, though. I haven't been training as hard as I have been, like back in the day.
Yeah.
So I started really training properly.
That's good.
So I want to do CrossFit and something called the Impy Challenge. Now, I don't know if I want to do it or if my
What's
best friend
challenge?
Is just putting pressure on me. It's like you jump off cliffs and you like jump into, like, you know, black people don't do that.
Jumping
off cliffs and into water that you don't know what's in the water.
Nah, I think that's always a bad idea. That's
like,
generally.
I know. So first my excuse was my hair won't handle it. So
yeah,
now,
yeah, like your hair is going to be totally
right.
But at least it's not chlorinated water, right?
You've seen me with wet hair. Like my best friend sees me with wet hair.
You just did that. Like it's looking so fresh today.
It's so fresh.
Now don't jump in no chlorinated water because then it just goes back to natural.
I don't think they put that kind of water. Like, you know, like they don't put chlorine.
In a river.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to try and compete in that and see if I can make it. I think the first challenge, but I'd be out. Like, I'd see that hill, I'd see the water, I'd be like, nah.
I missed a couple of kickboxing sessions. I was supposed to have started kickboxing.
But you've been doing a lot of stuff.
I went to one, and you know, it's township kickboxing. So it's not like... It's not like
that one,
No,
two,
it's not like the personal
one.
Trainers, like, we've got it exactly an hour, and then when we're done, and they explain everything to you. No, you just work until somebody dies. Like, when somebody passes out, that's when the session is starting to come to a close. Like, we're closing up now. So the last time I was there... the session was supposed to start at 5.
Yeah.
And we ended up finishing at like 7:15.
Damn.
And it was just like, when are we actually going to start kickboxing and stop like just doing this long ass warm up?
No, that warm up is hard.
That was like a 2-hour warm up, man.
Kickboxing
burpees
and box, right?
And all sorts of madness. I was like, is this
and
guy
then
crazy?
First, and they first make you like do the jog warm up because they're like, oh no, your muscles need a warm up.
Yeah,
and they're
like
they don't give you one lap.
Is this
no,
all we got?
They give you 2 laps. So by the time you're like stopping and they're like, okay guys, we're gonna stretch and you know start.
It was
you
like from like, one exercise to the next, from one exercise to the next, from one exercise to the next, from one exercise to the next, until somebody passed out. That's when it was like, okay,
but geez,
time to wrap it up.
You're stepping up your workout routine, eh?
I have
like
to.
You even ran a 10K.
I ran
what
a 10K. I'm trying to get to your level of fitness, Candace.
My level of fitness
alleged
reversed.
Alleged level of fitness.
It reversed. I just told you this.
All right. Well, we're very excited today because we've got somebody very special in the studio today. If you have not seen the movie Noom Meiskoli, which is Name Me Thief, then, direct translation, then you're really missing out because I just think it's one of the best movies South Africa's ever made, period, let alone South Africa's made in the past year. And in fact, it's the movie that has been selected to be entered into the Oscars, our South African selection. And I believe it'll do very, very, very well. And I hope it does very well. Remember, it's 10 years after Tsotsi. It's literally
Is it that
2006,
long?
2016.
Sure.
You know, there's an opportunity for history to repeat itself. And it couldn't happen for a nicer person, a more professional person than I know. I'd like to introduce Mushidi Mutekwa. You need your own music. I'm just going to turn this up a little bit for you.
I love that. I've never had that. I feel like there's a DJ just doing like a little thing for me.
I think we have like a horn somewhere, but you know.
I was going to do the clap thing.
We're going to do the clap? Oh, here we go. We got a horn.
Here we go.
Let me put the horn on for you. You need a horn.
Yeah, I'm that kind of
girl. Let me just make sure that everything's
we're
on.
We're narrating too much in this music.
There you go. Thank you, Thibaut Touch. So, Mushidi, I've always known you as a brilliant actress and a voice artist. Before we even get to like this fantastic movie that you were part of, just give us a brief background. Like, where did it all start for you? You know, you're from Alex, right?
I'm from Alex.
Wanyana Alex.
You know,
Chovicho.
Ofrem Maboro.
Ne?
Me.
Oh, da. It's da.
Like, it's da.
Yeah. So growing up in Alex, did you have dreams of the lights, the television screens, the silver screens? Yeah.
No, I was actually quite a nerd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I was,
were you hoping to be an accountant then?
No, actually, I wanted to study cell division.
Oh,
okay.
I know.
A bioscientist.
I just saw how Candace went, oh.
Even get there?
That's a big jump.
I was going to be that chick. You know?
Okay, dividing cells.
Dividing cells, DNA, genetics. I was very
interested. That sounds dope.
It does.
Yeah, maybe you would have found a cure for obesity. By dividing cells. I mean, you'd be rich. You'd be a billionaire. The person who does that, that's the next big thing. Forget about face Facebook or the next WhatsApp or whatever. Well, find a cure for obesity.
No, but won't that, it would be expensive. The cure wouldn't come cheap.
I don't care how much it costs. Ain't nobody going to go protest.
You know what, actually, fees it would be cheap. It
would it be cheap? Cheap?
It would be
you don't
cheap.
Have to charge too much.
You don't have to charge because there'd be so many people wanting it.
Yeah.
So mass production.
That is
mass
true.
Mass produce.
That
I think we're onto something. We should think about that.
Yeah.
So you finished matric.
I finished matric.
You got all your science and maths marks, right?
No, not really. I mean, that's my Alex dream.
That's a segue.
And then, I don't know, halfway through this life, I'm a love of story. Mm-hmm. I'm a love of books. I've always read as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, there was this school, the Johannesburg Art Ballet Drama and Music School. And it was always the school that I saw on the hill when we drove to town.
Yeah.
And I used to say to my parents...
The one next to what? What is now the Joburg Theatre or the Nelson Mandela Theatre,
yes,
right?
And I used to say to my parents, I want to go to that school. And the strangest thing in life happened when the school opened up for black kids. We received like forms in our post box.
Like what?
Like how is
how's
it?
That?
Like that's called
that's serendipity.
Like, you know what I mean? And I filled out these forms and they asked me to come for an audition. Mm. And I went in, I was doing drama at school. And I went in for an audition and I remember they said to me, we can take you but you'll have to repeat a standard. Now if you know back in the day.
That's what happened. Like I repeated grade two like three times. Yeah.
I don't think that's what happened.
No, I think you should say that out loud.
Well, let me explain because we're on this, right? So my first grade two, I was Kole Solang, Ko Harangkua. And we used to have like partitions between standard one and grade two, but sometimes I'd open the partitions.
Yeah.
And the standard one teacher was fierce. And I said, when I finished grade two, I'm not going to standard one. I'm sorry. Either I go to standard two or I stay right here. So they were like, okay, you can stay right here. And the following year, my parents were like, fortunately, we found you this nice multiracial private school.
Yeah.
But the catch is you have to do this whole grade two thing again.
So did you matriculate at 20?
No, I actually matriculated right on time at 18. I just started school at like 3 or 4.
Oh, they were clever. They saw the future.
Yeah. I mean, I was one of those smart kids, you know.
Like, I don't know.
Intelligent beyond my age. But let's not talk about me. We're talking about Mashidi. Yes. So there you are.
You can't compete with that.
Get genetics. We
need to deal with kids who repeat like standard.
Mark Shuttleworth.
I could have been somebody.
You missed the bus.
You are somebody to be sure. They just haven't seen you,
they
baby.
Haven't seen me yet.
They haven't seen you.
and so you go to NSA.
I go to what is now NSA, and I was. There were two black girls when I arrived. The one black girl left. I stayed on.
The pressure.
Oh my goodness. And it became bilingual. It went, went up.
What does that mean? Yeah. Because let's be honest, bilinguals are like English and Zulu.
We joined with a school called De Crane, and it became like a Tuetalaga school, to put it in Afrikaans.
Yes.
And I excelled in the school. I became a deputy head girl. I was hostel head girl.
Oh my goodness.
I was like captain of the red
you
team.
You go, girl.
I was that student. I told you I was a nurse.
Yeah. So how was your hair though? Because you know we had these hair issues
No.
Was your hair like
I was relaxed? I was
it was proper. It was like in
I was
line
doing
with
my
the
you were not doing the natural.
You know, black people need to own our thing, right?
Yeah,
it's not like we hated our perms. Yeah. It's not like we hated our staff, our relax. No.
I love my ex girl.
No, listen, they are sisters and brothers who love their stuff. I've got dreadlocks now, it doesn't mean I be hating. Do your thing.
So you're not team anything, because these days you have to be team something.
And you know what, actually about that, I think the discourse is bigger than hair.
Yes,
there's something else underneath the hair.
Yeah, but
hair,
I mean,
became like a platform, but we need to go what is underneath the
hair. Well, what do you think of that though? I mean, there are a lot of sisters who came out at some point on some, why do you have to have a weave, it's so un-African, why do you have to do anything
but it basically almost caused natural. It caused the vision among ourselves, you know, as women, because it was like, oh no, you're trying to be white if you wear a weave, and then if it's team natural, oh no, I can't maintain natural hair, you know. And it's
conflict. I just say you've got to find what you're comfortable with.
Thank you.
What works for you.
Just roll with what works for you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you like to get up in the morning and work it. Work it. It's your thing.
Why not?
Don't be shy.
Mm-hmm.
God gave it to you. Work it. You know.
It's your hair. You got the receipt to prove it.
It's your crown. Wear it.
Yeah.
No.
But then, I mean, like straight from there, did you then go to a drama school,
no,
like
a
varsity or anything?
No, okay. I actually met Munin Lee when I was at NSA.
Yes, you were one of those special kids, right?
Those special kids. Yeah. You know,
special. 17.
At 17, I had an agent.
And it's like not any agent. It's Munin Lee. It's MLA.
Yes, I got her when I was 17.
She got you.
She got me.
And the rest, as they say.
I don't know if it's history. And then I went to Wits and I did English and history and politics and yeah, and African literature.
Yeah, I remember.
No, I was not in the drama together. Department.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were in the drama department. They were working hard. I would go in and audition and do a play, enjoy
She'd
it.
She'd already been through all that. You know, she went to art school. The rest of us were like, oh my God, yes, we get to do drama every day.
I wasn't about like, to roll like that. Now. Yeah. In second year, I was already an actress.
Yes.
I was working at the market theater.
You could show them a thing or two.
No, I don't know about that.
They'd be like, you need to watch what she's doing. That's it.
Yeah, she was one of those good kids. But you know, when your parents are like, just
grow
like
up and be.
Yeah. But your year was a good year. You had good people in
We had a chunk of Wits that those 4 years, there were people coming in and out. Yep. A lot of them are working now.
Yes.
They're either producing, acting, voicing, directing, writing. I think it's one of the best crops of students to come out of Wits. It was a fierce time. There was a lot of great competition.
Yes.
But it was very positive competition.
Very.
I think everyone was friends with everybody and relationships have kind of stuck for those 20 years. It was 20 years ago.
And there was no sort of like rivalry.
I know. Well, you look great. You look fantastic, I must say.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Don't be shy.
No, don't, just because you're on our show doesn't mean you have to like, you know.
You're already on the show.
Flat
on the show.
It's okay. It's okay.
No, I actually love Dimisho. Dimisho is one of my favorites.
People don't know that he's actually like a nice person. He comes across as a complete douchebag on this show, but I mean, he's a great person. No, I'm kidding.
Thanks.
I'm teasing.
We've been together a while, so.
I can tell.
Yeah, it's like that now.
Yes.
But then from there, your first major breakout role. I remember you in a couple of TV shows on SABC.
Yeah.
I mean, you had many, but which one for you defined it as, I've now made it?
God, that's a difficult question.
Well, when you could go home and be recognized in the street, like you couldn't just get in a taxi anymore or combat.
You know what? I think I've always combat and I will still combat. I think that, you know what happens in this profession, and people sometimes get it very wrong, is that it's like climbing stairs. There isn't one thing that I feel like it's you're like a rising star, not a shooting star.
Okay.
There's sometimes people who are like shooting stars, and that's the problem. You've shot, you're gone.
And you burn out.
You're gone.
What do you think then of this phenomenon? Because, I mean, we didn't have social media when we started out. So a person kind of had to, like, know
do
what
the
they
work.
Were doing. Do the work.
When you were known.
You couldn't let your Twitter followers do the audition
the
for you, right?
Worked for you.
Yeah. And what do you think of this phenomenon? I mean, now that, in fact, let's say you're a producer, is that something that you consider that, okay, I'm casting someone, whether it's an it guy or an it girl, but they've got a huge following on Twitter and maybe they might
that
not be delivering
influence.
That well, but that might influence the ratings, the box office. Are those kind of things that you consider?
You know, when I started this producing thing, I had a conversation with my producing partner and he said, there's two types of producers. Producing's like food. You're either McDonald's or you like the three dinner sit down. Sorry.
It's okay. You're fine dining or you're McDonald's.
Yeah. Exactly.
You have to make a choice.
And you have to make a choice.
Do you think that you can't do both? Like
you
can't
can
have
do,
like a,
no,
a side
can.
Outlet?
You can do takeaway.
Yeah.
You can like, do chisanya.
Now
you
and again, though.
A quick and dirty soap
you
on the side.
You can do whatever you want to do. You can
straight
do,
after that, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think with each project, you've got to choose. With each project, it's also what brings you to the project.
Yeah.
I think producing takes a lot of time, a lot of energy. It's not the most financially rewarding thing in this country yet. It might become.
It used to be when we started out. I mean, all the producers used to make all the money.
Then the economy changed.
It just so changed. I hate it when it always changes.
The economy changed. And actually, the economy didn't change. The society changed.
Society,
you know what I mean? When we started out, there were like four producers. Now there's so many producers.
Yeah.
So there is just not enough.
Or, it's a saturated market.
You know, I don't even want to say there's not enough.
Yeah.
I think it's the decisions we're making. Who is making the decision? What is it we want to see on TV? What is it or offer? Or what is it we want our people to digest? Because it becomes about digesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like food. It comes back to food.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I mean, for you, is that a decision that you make consciously? Like, I want to feed my people something for their soul that can
it's
help
a,
them grow.
Listen, as an actor, it's always been a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing for me, the roles you get. It's a huge thing for me, what those roles mean, what they say. I have always tried, when I get work, to elevate it to the next level because we don't always get the best scripts. So I've often rewritten my lines. I've often just...
You've often had run-ins with directors?
Yes. I've just done what I think needs to be done. Yeah, because sometimes the person writing about you or the situation or the story is not always the person who's lived it. You can't ask me to play a character from Alex and you've been in Santon writing the part.
Yeah.
And you haven't done your research. Of course I'm going to...
Of course you're going to want to rewrite that.
Do you ever take roles, though, just for financial gain in a lot of ways?
Like, there's a lot of things we do for financial gain, sister. This could get dangerous. Let's just...
yeah, look...
let's put it in perspective here.
I must say, look, when I started out, I was one of those actors who, you know, because I went to drama school. And the dream then was, you know, hopefully I'll just end up doing... plays my whole life at a conservatory somewhere, you know, Shakespeare or a little bit of protest theatre.
Have you done theatre actually?
Yeah, that's where I started. Shakespeare, that's where I started. And SA theatre, you know. But I remember getting my first commercial and being kind of ashamed to tell the rest of the people because it's like I sold out. Did you ever feel that when you did your first?
Well, just remember, I didn't start with everybody else.
Yeah,
I had a different trajectory. I was 17 when I started working with Malcolm Perky and Marabi. When I was 18, I toured England, and when I was 19,
I mean, you were doing serious theatre.
Yeah.
So I got an opportunity that most people didn't get, and I think when I was 18, I got cast in the Winnie Mandela, the Mandela film, the one with Sydney Poitier.
Yeah.
And I remember coming home and telling my parents, "I've just been cast in this film with Sydney Poitier," and they were like, "Do you know who Sydney Poitier is?" So I think that because my trajectory was different, and also because I was my parents didn't want me to do drama, so the fact that I had to get good grades and suddenly I was going off on tours and doing all these crazy things, I always had to come back. I remember writing my exam in December, studying to write my exams in January for my degree, and I had to pass to prove to my parents that this thing that I want to do, the sideshow that I'm doing, this acting is going to work out.
This hobby.
Yes, because it was a hobby.
Yeah.
So I think I always had that thing of, I needed to prove that I can look after myself financially if I was going to do this thing.
Okay.
So there was real pressure for that. So I took work as it came. You know, I did industrial theatre. I did. I worked. I just took
But I mean, all those were still considered, you know, by the people who'd done the arts as, it's still a good, dignified, honourable job. It was like if you did an advert or... a soap. Oh my God!
You came from that acting school.
Yeah, I mean, Malcolm Perky was my lecturer, and you know, telling him I got my first role on a soapy was like, he was so disappointed.
Oh really?
No, Shane, you guys were disadvantaged. Let's just name it for what it
is. I had to really get past that. I had to get to a point where I'm like, look, there will be work that I do for money, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But there's a line I will not cross, which is doing those funeral plan commercials.
Jimmy should never say that. You don't know.
I'm praying.
You don't know where
I'm
life will
to God.
Take you.
I'm saying, God, please love me enough. Love me enough, Lord.
You might even be like the guy who's offering us tombstones. You know what,
you know what I'm saying?
Up for our tombstones.
Lord,
no, don't.
Lord, you know me and you got a good relationship. I'm begging you.
What if they pay really good, though? Like, if they really like Tamisha, your voice. Because Tamisha, literally, your voice is on every commercial.
I'll sell anything with my voice. But I'll sell that tombstone with my voice. But not with my face. Remember the Bradlow's ad in the 80s? Remember the Bradlow's lady?
I used to voice over for the Bradlow's later on in life.
Yes,
so I'm not even going to joke about Bradlow's.
And the whole thing back in the day was she was a great actress. She was going places. She did Bradlow's. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Oh, damn.
So that was the example.
But let's talk about something, because you're raising a very interesting thing. Women generally don't stay long in this profession.
Yes.
There is some... This profession...
It's not kind to women. No, no.
Especially for the life choices you might want to make in life as a woman.
Mm.
So I think the thing that we don't get taught very early on is that it's a business.
Yeah.
Mm.
You are your business. So as soon as you make that shift, you immediately can make different life decisions. I remember I spent a year in America, and when I came back, my whole way of thinking changed.
Mm.
Because first of all, I learned that this is your business. You've got to work your business.
Yeah.
You know, when I leave my house, I'm on business.
Mm.
When I'm at home, I'm Mushidi. That's a different thing. The Mushidi who does the work and Mushidi at home are two different people.
Mm.
So that change, I think, is very important. And I think with social media and all of these things, that's what we're beginning to see. We're beginning to see that kind of movement. But I'm also in two minds about it, because sometimes I'm like, what about the work?
Yeah.
What do you do? There's a lot of people, I don't know what they do, but I know they trend. I know I'm not on social media, so I'm not very good with this. They do things.
Yeah.
They say things, and what they say has an effect.
They're called social influencers.
Girl, you're so good. Yeah?
She's the generation. She's a millennial.
So the thing is, I think that there's a place for that.
Yeah.
In certain careers, but I think in this country, in terms of acting,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I think we still need to consider what is your talent.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Because that is the longevity you have.
Look, yeah. I must say, and like you're saying, I must be honest, there are a lot of people that I admire very much who are great actresses and actors with a great Twitter and social media following in general. Mm. There's some examples of guys who've, and girls who've come through and they first were, you thought, okay, they're just on social media.
Yeah. Mm.
But then they got the right parts and then you could really see what they were made of. And I really admire people who can use that as a tool for their business.
Yep.
Mm. And it's just what we have now and it's part of your toolbox, you know, as they say. So fast forward a couple of years and Nume Skoli comes your way. How did that even happen?
Mm. When I finished Rhythm City, I started doing a script editing course with the NFEF. And I did script editing course because I could sense that there was a shift in the industry.
Mm.
There were younger people coming.
Mm.
I wouldn't stay 18 forever. I wasn't going to buy a weave. I just knew my limitations.
Yeah, yeah,
very important to know your limitations before they tell you your limitations.
Yeah, you were not going to present live. Or what's that other music show, 808?
You know, I just was not. I was just not that chick. You
Channel
know?
O was not cool.
RGB.
I had done Channel O back then.
Yeah, back then. Actually, back then. Started then. Right?
Yeah, but now I was just not that material they were looking for, you know? So I did this course. At the time, I didn't quite know what I was going to do with it, but I knew that I loved story. I knew that writing is something that I possibly would want to do later on in life. And then I was given the script to read, Skoli, and I fell in love with Skoli. I fell in love with Skoli for many reasons. When I grew up in Alexander Township in the 80s, my neighbors were colored. So when I stepped out of my house, I heard Afrikaans.
No.
My community, the yard that I grew up in was
Afrikaans.
So I kind of felt like I had gone back home. I'd gone to the street where I grew up. I'd gone to the yard where I grew up. These characters, I knew them. You know, there's certain things, like a word like juvie. Juvie is a word that you will only know if there has been certain things in your life that has brought that kind of information in your life.
Yeah.
Juvie.
Okay, did you know some people who had come in and out of juvie?
My neighbor had done time in juvie. You know what I mean? I remember these, you know, my mother was a teacher and I remember my neighbor often coming and asking for money to go and see her son because he was back in juvie.
Yeah.
So this was a real universe that I really knew.
Yeah. Was that an 80s thing or was that a gassy thing? Because, you know, growing up, I also just knew, like, juvie is just like juvie. What people did.
Yeah, and you knew that somebody had gone to juvie.
Yeah, it's like you come and go, you know.
Yeah, you come and go, you know. And once you've done juvie, it felt like the person went back again. But you knew it was not a place you needed to go.
No. It was not for everybody.
It was not for everybody.
A certain type of person.
Yeah. You know, and they had the juvie feel.
Mm.
You know?
So the script comes your way.
It comes
your
way. I read the script. I'm doing the script editing course. On the script editing course, there's a woman called Henrietta Kreifenberg. We become friends. She's an actress. She's a veteran.
Yeah.
And at the time, she was commissioning editor at CakeNet. And I said to her, you know, I've got this Afrikaans script that I'm reading. I would like to find out your opinion. And I sent her the script. She didn't get back to me for a couple of weeks. And then one morning I got this email. She said, this is a great script, you need to come and talk to the people at MNET, they're funding films. And the next thing I knew, I had raised 3 million rand for the for the script. And this script had been in existence for almost 15 years by the time I came. 10 years by the time I came to it, because I was on the project for the last 5 years. So I then start assisting with the script editing of the script.
Mm.
It had been going through the NFEF script writing thing. They had a script editor, but we were just not getting
certain nuances in the script.
And also, I think it has a lot to do with, you've got to know the world of the story.
Mm.
Mm.
You've got to have a real... So the stuff that had been taken out, I brought back. I started to say to John, the writer, what was your mom's favorite psalm? Because one thing I know about women whose children have done time is that they're
Bible.
Very religious.
Yeah.
Your child is not in juvie if you ain't on your knees.
You got to be praying, man.
You got to be praying.
Yeah.
God is a real factor to you.
Yeah.
So we started to explore these kind of things. We started to explore the other nuances that I think often we lose out in South African scripts because we lose the authenticness of a place. Every place. If we made a story about Soshanguve,
where it's, I got hijacked recently.
Okay. But you know, there'd be nuances.
Yeah.
That anybody grew up in Pretoria would be like, I so get this. Mm. There's things that I would be like, yo, really? And you'd be like, the same way that if I made a film that was set in Alex in a particular time, that people say, I know that.
Especially in a particular time. Yeah.
In a particular time.
Actually, Alex has shifted, you know.
Alex has shifted. And this film is happening in the 60s. Mm. Although, I must say, when we shot it, I thought, so little has changed.
You know, when I saw the movie, I just felt like it's set in the 60s, but put them in contemporary clothing and put them in a set now, it's the same.
It's the same. And I mean, we had this debate. There was, when the script was being developed, they were trying to get us to make it contemporary. And I don't think you can take a man's words and put him into contemporary South Africa when his experience was in the 60s.
Mm. Yeah.
One thing we don't have now is hanging. Mm. This man's friends got hung.
Yeah, wow. Hanged.
Hanged. Thank you.
Yeah. Hung is something completely different. Most men would like to be hung, but not every man wants to be hanged.
Well, on that note,
importance of language.
Vamos hengile.
Yes.
Vamos hengile.
But let's talk about the writer as well. I mean, this man is in his 70s.
He's 70 years old.
He's 70 years old.
Hmm. He started writing this when he was 50. But I would say that his experience, his life experience,
And this is his life experience.
This is his story.
I mean, wow.
Yeah.
It's almost biographical.
It is.
It's actually a biography of his life.
Yeah.
And when you came in and you said you wanted to add some of those nuances back, what were those nuances that were important to you?
I think for me, the nuances that were important was to keep the authenticity. Mm-hmm. I remember reading it and it was in dual language. It was in English and Afrikaans. And I said, this man must write in Afrikaans. And this film must be made in Afrikaans. In fact, when I came on through the project, it was called This Boy. And when I finished reading the script and I came to the end of the script and it said, Nume Skoli, I said, that's the title.
Wow.
This is the title of the film. This man is saying something so much more. Because when you've done time and you've got those marks, people will never look at you in a different way.
Yes.
People remember.
It's the jacket you wear to society.
Yeah, and that's what he was saying. Mm. He was saying, despite all these years of working in prisons, teaching creative writing, all the different things he's done. John has done a lot of things, by the way. John did a documentary about a hip-hop artist called Devious, who was shot on the Cape Flats. And it actually won the New York Hip-Hop Film Festival.
Wow.
That's incredible. Wow.
So I'm not talking just about an ordinary kind of guy. I'm talking about somebody
who has changed.
Well, somebody, it's not even about change. I think it's somebody who's always had a gift, because I think we all have a gift.
Yeah.
And I think different life circumstances give you the possibility for that gift to exist.
But isn't it like ironic that without his having spent time and his background, we would never have had Nume Skoli, and he wouldn't be where he is right now. So life, everything in life is a gift, even the things that you think are negative or you're not happy about them at that time.
Of course.
Now, you weren't just a producer who came on because, well, NFVF was just looking for black women producers.
No.
You did this. You were quite hands on.
No, I was hands on. I was on that set every day.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the money. I was on that set every day. I did the costume.
Your experience as a producer, like from before when you were like, what do producers actually do as an actress? Yeah. And then like now, what has changed?
I think what I know is that producers, well, if you produce the way I produce, which is like right hands on, like from I'm working the script with the director, I'm in the casting, I'm in the costume decisions, I'm just in it. I think it's one of the hardest jobs to do, because in between that, you're also doing admin. You're doing you're making sure people are getting paid. You're responsible for people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
So it's not just, it's a business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, there's the creative, but there's the business.
The contracts.
The contracts.
To make sure
you know
that
what I mean? And also that there's those small little things that we take for granted as actors. You have been booked. Can you be there on time?
Mm.
Whilst you're under my employment, I own your body. You can't just go cut your hair.
Really? Are we still dealing with those?
You can't just not pitch up, because it's just not going to work.
I thought we had become more professional by now.
Listen, I think that, you know, I think actors need to produce, even if it's just once in your life. The same way that I think directors need to act, even if it's just once in their life.
Yeah.
The same way that producers need to act, direct at some point in their life.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes we take for granted the different roles that everybody plays. Mm. You can't make a film without a tribe. You can't make a film without a village.
Mm-mm.
And I think it's very important how you treat people.
Mm.
One of the things when I went into this project, I always said to David, my partner, was, we will treat people well. We went in with no budget. We were shooting in Cape Town. Cape Town is expensive.
Mm. Oh my god.
Getting location in Cape Town.
Yeah. It's and the right location. You can just get any location. Exactly. You had to get a location that matched the 60s.
Exactly. So we were reliant on the generosity and the kindness of other people. So when you're reliant on that, you want everybody to buy into your idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You want everybody
to... You can't throw money at the problem.
Yeah. You can't throw money at the problem. You've got to come up with an artistic solution to the problem. So one of the reasons we were so hands-on was because of that.
Mm.
You know, we couldn't go over budget.
Yeah. There was no more. All you got was 3 million.
Yeah, that, no, we got some money from NFVF and money from Mnet. So by the end, we had 6 million. But it's nothing for a period.
6 million is nothing.
It's nothing.
I just did a budget and I was like, oh my gosh, it's finished. Yeah. We got to 6 million. Now I got to bring it down again.
Yeah. Hmm. So, and you know, you've got to hire costume, it's locations, it's cars, it's those small things that you can't even imagine. Parking. You got to pay for parking.
Yeah. Mm.
You
yeah,
know, yeah. It's you got to pay for...
You got to pay for unit.
You got to pay for electricity.
Where everyone stays, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, electricity, the journey.
All those things become like...
Water.
You, and you're like,
you're a mini government. You should go, you should run for politics.
I could run
but
for politics.
But don't... I feel like this is actually stripping away the airs and flares of the entertainment industry because a lot of the time...
The entertainment industry doesn't have flares. It's just people have made
people,
it like that.
Exactly. People have put on so much glitter and glam to this industry that when people come out, producers come out, directors come out, and they say, this is actually the reality of my job.
Yeah.
People on social media are like, damn, so I can't just do this by like directing an Instagram video? Are you sure?
Well, you can. Yeah. I mean, now anything is possible.
Yeah.
Let's not say you can't, but it depends how you want to do it, how big a scale you want to go on. What is it that's making you want to do it? So I don't say no to anything. I say everything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's about where you at, what you have access to, and the kind of courage and passion and confidence you have.
Mm. What I enjoyed about this story, and this is where I think a lot of South African stories, for me, have always been problematic. We watch the story, we follow the lead, we get invested, and then at the end, it's bad news. It's like, oh, we went through all this, and then you just die. What I loved about it was there was very real hope, especially when we see John's character in the film become John himself.
Yes.
And you realize, this is real, but also this guy actually did something with his life. You know, after all that he's been through, something good happened. It was worth going through this pain with him and everything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Was that always there or was that something that you had to kind of say,
that was something that was always there. And I think kudos to the director, and Darren Joshua did an amazing, amazing, amazing job.
Yeah.
It's his first feature. And I just think he's going to be one of the most interesting directors.
He's
going to
be amazing. I mean, I can't believe that it's his first feature.
Yeah. And just as a person, I think for me, it's always about the person.
Mm.
What makes great films is also the people behind
it. And how did you find him? I mean, how did you decide?
You know what? We went through so many directors and it got to a point where we didn't have a director. And it was very interesting because at the point where we didn't have a director, I said, I'm going to go to London and do a directing course because if we can't find a director, I will direct this film myself.
Yeah.
So I went off and I did the directing course and I came back. But what was great is that it actually helped me to become a better producer.
Huh.
Yeah. I came back knowing what my director was doing.
Yeah.
So I could be a better assistant to
him.
But we had had another director who was just not working well with the actors, but also wanted to change the script.
During the shoot process?
No, this is before.
Okay.
And he just wanted to change the script. And we've had this problem. And I was like, you do not come on a project about a man's life and change the project. You bring the artistic vision. You can do that.
Mm.
But you can't change his words because that's his life.
Mm.
So that director went off and we had a production design already. So we already started bringing in crew.
Mm.
And our production designer said, I've got this young guy. He's done short films, but he's never done a feature. And
immediately you were like just so scared.
I wasn't.
Really?
I said, give me his phone number. I want to speak to him.
Okay.
So
I suppose at this point you had the money already, right? So it wasn't...
We had the money, but it was also that thing of... It's quite scary when you don't have a director.
Mm.
It's
yeah.
pretty scary.
What are you going to do?
Exactly.
You don't have a phone.
So I picked up the phone and I spoke to Darren on the phone. And I put down the phone and I said, we found our guy.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
I went with my gut instinct. I went with my gut instinct. He sent in a you know, his resume. He did a pitch. And he was just on point. He was our man.
Yeah.
This film brought the people who needed to work on it. This film was made by the people who worked on it. You know, we were blessed. Even I remember our lead guy, he came into audition at 5 o'clock.
His name.
down Jacques Mouton.
He's just so brilliant.
I know.
In fact, I must say there was not one single bit of bad casting. You know, where we, especially because we don't have the budgets, is that the leads are great and then everyone else, we can't afford them. So that person used to be an extra. Mm. And so please, can you do this for us? But every single person on that screen had earned the right for us as an audience to want to know their story.
We spent time on that.
Yeah.
That was time. That was us going out into the Cape Flats. And we had a young man, Ephraim Gordon, come on to help us cast. And we went out to the Cape Flats and we looked for those kids.
Hmm.
And we worked with those kids. Our extras have done time. Our extras are from Manenberg.
Wow.
I remember the first day they arrived on set and I was like, oh my word. Who just walked on set?
Hmm.
Yeah.
By the end of those 10 days of us shooting the prison scenes, I loved those men. I loved for what they brought.
Were any of them real prisoners? Because they
no, they we were signing
they were
parole
too real.
Letters.
Oh yeah.
Signing parole letters.
They were too real.
Gums,
I was scared.
Gums had done time. And
Gums, there's no way Gums didn't do time. No, Gums is serious.
He
I don't want to meet
convincing.
Gums. Yo.
Gums was good. Gums did acting. He discovered he's got acting talent in prison.
Oh.
And actually, he then got arrested again for a crime he did not commit.
Oh.
And when we screened at Paulsmoor, because our film had a premiere at Paulsmoor,
Nice. Nah, how dope
and he
is
had
that?
To come in chains in
to
his
watch
outfit
himself.
To watch
he
himself.
He was actually
Jeez.
He was in prison.
He was back.
He was back.
Oh, damn.
Watching himself.
But now he's out. And actually, Scully helped his case so that he could come.
You know,
so,
I wish him all the best. I hope he goes from film to film.
No, he's fierce.
Because
he was fierce.
He's so real, man.
No, he took the film. The film was here and he took it
he
there.
He just took it to that level.
He took it to that level.
Like, you need a great antagonist. And Gums was just
it.
On point.
Like, if you see Gums, you won't want to do time.
No.
If nothing else.
I rethought my future.
But is this similar
changed.
To that advert, Papa Bakhoyo, where when everyone saw that guy, they were like, I'm never going to prison.
It's like, I think it was 100 times worse.
Oh, hell
because
no.
Gums gets to talk as well.
Oh.
And you know, he doesn't look like much.
No.
I'm sure, you know,
so
he's a skinny guy.
Yep.
But
his power.
He'll make you do things. He'll make you his bitch. And
oh
I don't want to be Gums' bitch.
But
you know,
after all this talk about this film, like my curiosity is like, where do we get hold of this film?
Because it's in the cinema.
It's
been in the cinema for 6 weeks now.
No, but I go to Stoke Kinikoy and New Metro. I don't see Numa Skoli.
It's now gone on to
Cinema
Nouveau. But hopefully it will come back to mainstream.
Well,
right?
You know, it's still in Cape Town. It's all over. What happened is that we released it in 28 cinemas. Joburg didn't do greatly, so it stayed at Cinema Nouveau. It's in Brooklyn and Pretoria, and Cape Town is all over. So a film is going to stay in cinema according to
look, I think the thing is, in Gauteng,
yes.
Sorry to jump in there, but in Gauteng, when I first saw the title and I knew it was coming out.
It's Afrikaans.
It's Afrikaans. So immediately it's like, oh, they didn't make this for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. That's exactly it. Because
yes.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, Numa Skoli. Or, you know, it's like, it's like, damn, okay. I'm not.
Listen, we were taking a chance. We knew that South Africa is very divided. Let's not lie about this.
Mm.
And Afrikaans is an issue for us.
But the thing is, right, I think that it would do so well in the townships. It would
do so well to
a black audience.
Let me tell you something.
They went and saw
that's
it.
The reason I did that film, because when I read that Afrikaans, like, I know these.
I'd have
know
to read
this.
The subtitles.
You don't have to read the subtitles.
No.
Really?
Yeah,
you don't have
to
read
the.
You know, you cannot
you feel
have grown
what they're
up
you don't
in
even
this
know
country.
It. Yeah.
If you were part of the children that were born before 76, from 76, before 94, you know Afrikaans. And if you know Afrikaans, you can watch this film even without subtitles. If you grew up in the township, you can definitely watch this film.
But I don't see why not. We can't have a re-release on mainstream again. And maybe Stoke Kinikoy coming on board and doing something
is
different
on board.
In terms of the marketing and where they push it to. You know.
Well, you know what? I think it's always going to be about numbers. Unfortunately, as I said, it is a business. It was on circuit in a lot of cinemas here. But because there was an attendance... and again, it is that issue. Race is an issue, guys. We've got to put it out there. We've got to name the beast for what it is. If I was just Mushidi and I'd seen Numa Skoli, I wouldn't have gone watch it.
Yes.
I wouldn't have gone to watch it. But I've made the film and I'm going, actually, sometimes we've got to extend ourselves. We've
break
got to get
outside,
outside of our comfort zone.
Mm.
I never imagined producing my first feature to be an Afrikaans film.
Yeah.
I never imagined it to be in Cape Town. About a colored man.
You know.
Gee.
Probably thought you were going to make the first feature was going to be a story about a black woman with one eye, missing a leg, who's HIV positive.
No.
Got to rise above.
There's other people who make those stories. Yeah.
Thank God, I think I was going to make many of those. Thank God,
I was going to make a story about some fierce black woman.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's what we need.
Like, some fierce black
woman goes and robs a bank. Damn it!
Who owns all of herself?
Set it off.
Yeah,
who owns set all of herself off. And then some?
Listen, you know I can play the male love interest. I'm working. You know, I'm back in the gym. But you know, I wanted to ask you another question on that. I was very surprised when I'm watching this film and it starts and Skakenet presents, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then Sunny's like, Mushidi Mutahwa.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How?
Yeah. No, but even when you told me on the phone, I was like, hello?
Yeah, how?
I think you're breaking up.
Yeah.
Say it again.
Say that again. It's impossible. Any new projects on the way?
I like to take space and digest things. I think I'm in an interesting place. Also, a lot of things happened in between Scully. I got a part written for me in Black Sails, season 3 and season 4.
That's gonna be amazing.
That's what's up.
I finished that at the beginning of this year.
Nice.
So I'm doing my voiceovers as always. Paying my bills.
You know,
I'm a taxpayer.
Every other female voiceover is Mushidi. Yeah.
No, Dimisha, you don't have to put it out like that. I'm a working girl.
No, in a good way.
I'm a working girl.
Here's what I wanted to say, though. Because sometimes we say that, and in South Africa, it's almost like,
open
the industry. It's time to let other people. Because we almost don't love success. But it's not because, you know, of anything except that you're very good at what you do. We've done a lot of voice work together. Mm-hmm. We've worked together as well. We did drum together.
Yes.
You know, but there always seems to be this thing of, okay, you've done enough now, you kind of paying your bills, can you like stop? I get that
and you know I'm done like that's not my issue. That's your issue. That's you projecting some other issues upon my being that is not allowed in this space. You know what, the problem with our industry is that it doesn't have the people behind us. Who was behind us? Who was before us? So people disappear because there isn't kind of the next thing you can do. And I think part of it has to do with where we come from. Part of it has to do with socioeconomic, you know, what is happening in your environment at that time. But I do think there has to become a change. We can't always be putting together money when an artist dies. There has to be a change. We also have to become more business minded.
Yes.
We know that the work we do is irregular. Treat your life with that kind of financial irregularity.
Yeah.
You know, become financially savvy. Get an accounting degree.
If you must.
if you must.
That's where I started, actually. I did that first before I went into drama. I didn't get a degree, but you know, I did accounting and I did law. I just want to put it out there. And economics, by the way.
Oh, I did politics. I'm did surprised politics. They're not. I'm not in parliament.
And,
but
and
I'm
African
here.
Literature.
And African literature.
Yeah, yeah. But do you think sometimes that the industry gets too small for people with big dreams, big ideas, big ambitions?
You know, Dimisha, I think everything happens at the right time for different people. And your right time is not my right time. So I don't believe there's a small industry. I think you're just where you're meant to be. And you need to ask the question, why am I here? What is the contribution I can contribute? What is going to be my legacy? What will I leave behind? And I think what I miss at the moment is, can the work speak for you? Can your work just speak for you? Somebody asked me yesterday, your film's been nominated, but I haven't heard any noise about you. I said, I've always believed the work must speak. You don't have to like me. You don't have to love me.
Yeah,
but you can love my work.
I mean, you don't have to follow me on
social media.
I'm not on social media. But it's important that the work speaks. So I think there's enough space for everybody.
We got to go because we got to wrap it up. But I'd love to hear from you, like, last words for any aspiring. Because, you know, I get sometimes people asking me, what can I do? I just want to do this. But especially advice to a 20-year-old Mushidi.
Just believe in yourself. Just believe in your crazy dreams. And don't try to be like somebody else. You are you. You have a reason for being here. You have a gift. You need to know what your gift is and give yourself time to discover your own gift.
Yeah.
And everything that happens in your life has a reason and a purpose. And spend time with yourself. When you're 20, you don't spend time with yourself. Yeah. You spend time with everybody else.
Except you.
And maybe if we spend time in our 20s with ourselves, by 30, we would be like kicking ass.
We might find out who we are, right?
We might get there faster.
Yeah,
I think we should just like...
spend time with you.
Spend time with you.
Get to know you. Believe in you.
And don't worry about who's trending. You are trending in your own
You are trending, yeah.
You are the trending. Lead in your own life.
Yeah.
That was so dope.
Awesome.
Thank you for a wonderful, wonderful time. Make sure that you catch the podcast if you missed this one. But we're out of here until next week.
Thank you, guys. See you next week.
Thank you so much. And go watch Nume Scully. If you have to go to Cape Town, go watch it in Cape Town.
No, we are here. Please, Cinema Nogo.
Go to Brooklyn, guys.
Rosebank.
Don't be extreme with your life.
Go see it. And the more you see it, we will bring it back onto mainstream circuit.
It's a great film. Thank you so much.
Bye, guys.
And we are out of here. CliffCentral.com.